On today's episode, we talk to Stephanie Summer, the liaison for funeral professionals and medical examiners for the Body, Organ, and Tissue Donation of Gift a Life of Michigan. So we're going to talk about donation. We're going to talk about who can be donated. How can I be donated? What do you think?
Some valuable information, everyone. Listen in.
Let's talk about death, baby. Let's talk about grief and mourning. Is it argumental or existential? What's it mean to me? Let's talk about death.
Basketball, psychologist.
Hey, Nick, let's talk about death.
Let's do it.
So, Doc, today we have Stephanie, and Stephanie is a wonderful liaison from Gift of Life Michigan. She is a liaison for not only the funeral directors, myself included, but also for the medical examiners. So, Stephanie, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us today.
Thank you for this opportunity.
It's wonderful. And every time I have a conversation with you, I just learn another thing or two about donation and just the wonderful things that Gift of Life Michigan is doing. So in a very, I don't know if you could encompass what basically from start to finish at the hospital of an organ donation kind of goes through the steps, and then we can talk a little bit more. I got some more questions on that. So go for it.
Sure. So, you know, the pathway for an organ donor and a tissue donor are quite different. Organs are the donors that we hear about on the news all the time. You know, heart, lungs, liver, kidneys, pancreas, and intestines are organs that can be donated. And in order to be an organ donor, you have to be in a hospital on a ventilator long enough for Gift of Life to come on site and evaluate you as a potential donor. Once it's deemed that you're a candidate, the process is kind of similar with tissue donors. We assess the donor registry to see if somebody is registered. And if they're not, we talk to their family about authorization. If you are a registered donor in Michigan and have a heart on your license, that is a legally binding decision. So you make your decision and then your family doesn't have to. From that point, it is a complicated process that is carefully orchestrated by literally hundreds of people. Once someone is declared brain dead prior to organ donation, they can remain on the ventilator for 3 days before they actually go to OR for recovery. We do have a surgical center at our facility in Ann Arbor, and some organ donors are actually moved on a vent to our facility. It frees up an ICU bed at the hospital, and, you know, the physicians, the transplant surgeons that actually recover the organs can come to our facility, and we could have multiple donors at once. So if U of M, for example, had accepted organs from two different donors, they would be you know, at one facility. So it's very convenient for everybody involved, and it's also good for families because it helps us maximize those precious gifts from organ donors.
You were talking about the hearts on the licenses and that they're legally binding. Let's say your spouse doesn't want you to do it. Can she veto that?
Another complicated question. If it is a vented organ donor and it is the decedent is registered, we do everything possible to move forward with the donation and to honor the donor's decision that they made prior to death. And legally, we can move forward. Just like I asked funeral directors the question, if I don't have it written in my funeral plan and I say, I definitely want to be cremated, and my husband walks into the funeral home and says, oh no, we're having a viewing and a visitation, he can do that, right, Benny?
That is 100% correct. In fact, I'll just give you a quick little story here that we just had a couple of years ago, where for our local hospital, they will hold the body until they have talked to you guys, and then you guys have communicated with the family. And what the problem we have here in Ida is our families, our expectations of Dad and I going right away. So they left the hospital without the hospital telling them that was going to happen, because it was yet again in the middle of the night. So Dad and I were halfway there. We've already talked to the spouse that we're going to get her loved one. And then the hospital calls when we're halfway there saying that, you know, this person is on hold for a donation. And the spouse was pretty angry with that. So because here's the problem, Stephanie, and we'll get more communicate about this. But I think for some people, they have this impression that when they have their loved one go into organ donation, they hear these words such as harvest. They hear these words where they're, you know, basically in their mind, which we will get into why it's untrue, that their loved one is going to be basically opened up and eviscerated, basically, and not be able to have an open casket. So for that individual, it was very stressful. But you're absolutely right. If there is no plan, if there's no heart on, if you don't register, and your family decides, or next of kin, because not everybody has a great relationship, their person, they can deny it, and then from there, then Dad and I will get the call that the body has been released, et cetera, et cetera. So Stephanie, that I think that answers your question, correct? That was kind of where your thing is. If there's no prior registration, the family does have the ultimate choice. But I did not know that, Stephanie, and I never came across that where somebody was a register and then the family tried to veto it. So I've never had that. So I'm glad you clarified that, because that's wonderful for people to know.
Yeah. Again, these are patients that are on a vent in the hospital, in the ICU, making end-of-life decisions. And it happens a couple times a year where a family initially objects. But if we bring in, spiritual care and ethics, and we can slow the process down because the patient is hopefully stable on a ventilator, so we have time to start over, start from the beginning, have the conversations. And I mean, I can't remember a time where we've had to go to court to override a family's objection to organ donation. They often object at the beginning. I don't think they're saying no to donation or to their loved one's decision to donate. I think they're saying they have control over something, like, absolutely not, we're not doing that, But if you slow down and start with, what kind of a person was he? Can you imagine him signing up or answering the question yes when he was asked at the Secretary of State if he wanted to be an organ donor? Yes, he would do anything for anyone. And it kind of reframes the conversation. For tissue donation, which far more people qualify for tissue donation, because the only trigger for us to evaluate a potential tissue donor is death, cardiac death. So if somebody goes to a hospital and they're not able to be maintained on a ventilator, they no longer qualify for organ donation, but they still have the potential to give the gift of tissue. In those cases, we will not move forward with recovery unless we can place tissue for transplant. And if we don't have a medical social history from the family, we can't place tissue for transplant. And so therefore, we would not recover. So legally, could we go to OR and recover tissue if the family objects? Yes. Do we? No, because we can't. We're not going to recover tissue that can't be transplanted.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful. And I want to clarify something too for people, that when you're talking about organ and tissue, right? Cause you can donate, what is it, up to 7 organs. Is that correct? Am I on the right page here?
Yes.
And then up to, with tissue and organ, you could possibly help out at least 100 people. Is that also true?
Yes, it is absolutely true.
So my question to you right now, in your knowledge of how many people would benefit from donation, do you have a number for that, Stephanie?
Yes.
And right now?
I do. So in Michigan last year, we had more organ donors than we've ever had, 463 organ donors and 1,821 tissue donors. So 463, that doesn't sound like a huge number. I mean, we get 56,000 referrals a year. And from all of those phone calls that we get at Michigan hospitals where we placed holds on decedents that you were just talking about, 463 organ donors, just over 1,800 tissue donors. And the most commonly transplanted tissue is corneas. And that was almost 1,700 cornea donors in Michigan. So while we cast this really wide net, very few decedents actually end up qualifying for donation. We have a high conversion or consent rate. I think in organs, it's around 75 or 80%. And for tissue, it's closer to 50 or 60%. So we do get authorization, but often there are factors that preclude donation from happening.
Would those sorry, Stephanie, would those be like cancer, or if it was a death due to like overdose or something like that, would that be some of these reasoning why they wouldn't be qualify for donation?
Yeah. Another super complicated question, because the criteria changes all the time. For organ donation, we're actually much more lax on rule outs because organs are considered life-saving and it could be a high-risk donor. For example, somebody that uses IV drugs would be a rule out for tissue. That's the FDA kind of sets the rule out criteria. But for organ donation, we do serology testing. So we know if there are any communicable diseases, prior to recovering organs. So somebody that used intravenous drugs may be still qualify for organ donation. The transplant surgeon and the patient that accept the organs would know that it's considered high risk. But again, we do so much testing in that couple of day period from the time brain death is declared until the time we go to the OR to recover organs, that transplant surgeons have a really good idea of what they're getting for their recipient.
Is there age restriction? So for instance, if somebody's over 80, do they still have an opportunity to donate? Flip that around. If somebody's a newborn, let's say it's a parent of a newborn that was willing to give another baby, for instance, an organ or whatnot.
We're very aggressive about finding ways to utilize organs, because there's a huge gap between the number of patients waiting and the number of organs that are currently available for transplant. And I think 21 people a day die waiting on the list that are actually listed. A lot of people come off the list because they're too sick to get a transplant, but just actively listed patients, I think 21 a day is the number. So also age. 6 or 7 years ago, 75, I think, was the age cap for tissue donation. There is absolutely no age for organ donation. I mean, we evaluate every organ every time. So you can have a 95-year-old person that, their kidneys are not functioning well, their lungs and heart are worn out, but they could have a great liver. And if the numbers are good and the biopsy is good and the evaluation is good and somebody accepts it, we will place that liver. I think 97 is the record for liver transplant. I know we recovered and transplanted lungs from a 78-year-old, and the recipient did well. As far as tissue donation, 101 was our oldest tissue donor last year. I have a friend who her dad passed away He was in hospice, 93 years old. She is a nurse practitioner in the Beaumont or the Corwell system and has spoken for Gift of Life. She's a palliative care nurse practitioner. So she's a huge champion for donation. And when her dad passed away in hospice at, you know, an extended care facility, it never occurred to her that he could possibly donate. He was referred by the medical examiner in the county where he lives, because if it's a non-hospital death, that's the entity that is responsible for making the referral, so that the decedent is connected with Gift of Life and we have the opportunity to honor their donation decision if they're registered or talk to their family if they're not. And so she got a call. It was automatically referred by the medical examiner. She got a call from Gift of Life and it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I would have thought of that. You know, that's the other thing. Our time frames, if you're on a ventilator, then we can suspend the clock as long as the person remains stable. But for tissue donation, the FDA and the American Association of Tissue Banks has very strict criteria. And if uncooled time cannot exceed 15 hours, and if a decedent is cooled within 12 hours, we have up to 24. But if they pull into our driveway at our surgical center at 24 hours and 1 second, or actually 23 hours and 55 minutes, we probably can't move forward because we have to start prep by that 24 hour mark. And every minute counts.
So going back, so the age on the high is, you answered that and I appreciate that. What about infants? Are infants allowed to donate? I know that's it's a strange, and I'm sure it doesn't come across your table quite often, but it is a good question for our listeners out there who might be thinking about
it. It's a very good question, and it comes up more than you would think. Babies can only donate heart valves. Heart valves are life-saving for other babies that need valves. You know, most of the time we say tissue donation is life-enhancing. Heart valve donation is life-saving. So what we do if we have an infant death, the weight has been 5 pounds, you know, that the child needs to weigh 5 pounds in order to donate heart valves. But we've even pushed that. We had a family that came to us, and she was giving birth to an anencephalic baby, and the baby weighed less than 5 pounds. And so they really, really wanted to donate. They'd been planning it through her pregnancy. And we found one of our partners that accepts cardiovascular tissue, accepted that. And I think maybe the baby weighed 3 pounds. And actually, I believe the tissue was placed for transplant. So we're constantly pushing the envelope. The other complicated thing with infants is heart valves have to be recovered prior to autopsy. There are some tissues that we can recover after autopsy. So if the medical examiner is involved, that's a whole dance with whether they will release tissue, which tissue they will allow us to recover. If we can do it in the time frame that honors everybody's schedules, very complicated, you know, within that 24 hours. Medical examiners and forensic pathologists are super hesitant to release baby heart valves. Even if it's clear that it's like an unsafe sleep situation, they want to rule everything out. So we again, try all kinds of creative things. Like, how about if our team comes to your office? Normally, all of our tissue donors come to our surgical center in Ann Arbor for recovery, or we actually have a surgical suite in the UP now. But most, of course, in this area, lower Michigan, come to Ann Arbor. So that's a lot of time, too, involved in transporting. But, you know, can we come to your office? we have to have a sterile environment to do the recovery, but they're usually pretty accommodating of setting that up. And then they can do an external exam, do x-rays if they need to, and then they can actually see the heart before we take it to send to our partner to recover the valves. And then they can get the residual heart tissue back so that they can do a pathology on it.
Yeah.
So that answers that. And my other question, how about the placenta transplant? How does that work? I know you've been doing some things with that, I think with St. Joe's, correct? If I'm not mistaken.
We have. And that is not my, medical examiners and funeral homes are not involved in placenta donation. So, I'm very close with my colleagues in our tissue department, and we were just at St. Joe Ann Arbor, and now we're blowing it out all over the state of Michigan. So, we're adding staff. We were just doing it on planned C-sections. We were only consenting moms that were having a planned C-section, and I think we're pushing that envelope. So the placenta is used for wound care applications. I can't talk intelligently about that, but it's amazing, amazing what the healing properties are once that tissue is prepared, as a therapy.
So I want to just throw out some things to the listeners too, because I want to break some taboos and some stigmas that are around this. First of all, to promote Gift of Life and what it does, because it's absolutely amazing. You can have an open casket funeral. You can have a visitation. You can have the full embalming after your loved one has donated the gift. That's a big one that I hear all the time.
Go ahead. You're an embalmer.
Yes, correct.
You're an embalmer.
Yes.
And we can recover enough tissue to heal and help over 100 people. And you can still prepare that donor so that their loved ones can view them in an open casket with their friends and family. I think that's incredible. So we can do the work that we do and save and heal lives because of the work that you do. But how do we tell that story and get rid of that misconception? Because I think it's still very real.
Stephanie, it's this conversation right here. It's these conversations. Doc and I have talked about this a lot, that the biggest problem that we've had for a long time with the death profession is we don't talk about it and we don't use each other as platforms to not only promote each other, but to educate the public on death. And so this is exactly why you're on, Stephanie, and you're doing a wonderful job. And I can tell the passion is there. And I want to go into something, because our listeners know very well that Nick and I take a lot of not only professionality, but we care about the families that we serve. And I think it was really important when I found out that when you take a loved one into your care, and I want you to talk a little bit about this, but you have that was a moment of silence, or you actually give space for that individual as a human being and not just as a body that's donating.
One thing that we do ask, is there anything that you would like to do to honor your loved one? Any music you would like to play? And just seeing the notes in that chart are amazing. Like, okay, can you play Amazing Grace, and give very specific, musicians
awesome.
And songs.
Do you find that there is some doors that stop some individuals because of their faith or their religion, that they can't be organ donors because of their commitment to their faith? Do you ever come across that, Stephanie?
Most major religions approve of organ donation and tissue donation and consider it, an act of charity or the ultimate act of human kindness. In Michigan, Catholics, Protestants, most sects of Judaism and Islam are supportive of donation or leaving the choice up to the individual. So like in Islam, it's actually better to be a registered donor because they know what their loved one's wishes were. It is still challenging sometimes. You know, of course, we have a great video on our YouTube channel called A Matter of Faith. But just because we can say that the Islamic faith generally supports organ donation doesn't mean that every imam in Detroit is going to be supportive when a family comes to them and asks the question. So it can still be a barrier, but for the most part, all major religions are supportive of donation.
Well, I think it goes back to something Doc and I have been preaching since the first episode we had, and I think it's just the communication with your family about your wishes, actually having a conversation, maybe even if you are, you know, very religious or you're very into your faith, have conversations with your priest, pastor, et cetera, et cetera. Because I think at the end of the day, that's the biggest problem that we see in the United States is we don't even have those conversations. So yet again, we can barely get people in for pre-need to begin with. But if they can actually just have a conversation with their loved ones, even if it's at a dinner table, expressing this is what I want, I'm on the, you know, organ donation, if something should happen to me, please get in hold of them, you know, and it's as easy as one conversation. And I think at least we can have one. Stephanie, can we at least agree that if most families had one, this would be a lot healthier of a situation we have?
Well, and when I was in the role of approaching families for organ donation, it was a conversation. And then, you know, if you, every time you have the conversation, you get a little bit of closer. I've had a couple of funeral directors that just asked me great questions, you know, like people that are in their 80s that are just more hesitant than people that are my age or your age. And it's so interesting to see the evolution after multiple conversations. So yeah, it's conversations and education. And why don't we like to talk about death? I love to talk about it.
I think all of us death professionals have a mindset that it's so important. In our, of course, our slogan is if you're not talking about death, you aren't living. And we abundantly live by that credo. But you know, I think what people need to hear, and if they don't get anything else from this, is just how important it is to even just have the conversation, whether you're in on donation or not. It's something that should be addressed to your loved ones. And I think you're absolutely right, Stephanie. Once you kind of get past the hurdle of that initial conversation, you might learn a lot that you weren't sure, like what we're talking about. You can actually have a visitation. You can have an open casket. You can still be viewed. And I want to say another extra thing that you guys have done, especially recently, has gone out of your way to communicate and ask funeral directors if there's anything that can not only make the donation go smoother on our end, but also on the family's end. And that is very much appreciated. Another thing I want to throw out to the families of donation individuals, they will be getting a call. And if they don't answer that call, that body will stay on hold until they answer that call. So I know you're going through a lot with the hospital. You're going a lot through your pain and your grief, but you're also will be getting a call from you guys. And I've gotten that a lot too, where you guys will call a couple times and be like, we still haven't heard from the family. You know, have you heard? And that's tough. And that's challenging because we don't want, Dan and I are not here to call a family and say, this is what you got to accept or decline or whatnot. But it's also like, we want them to know what's going on. So it's like this kind of dance.
Yeah. So some words for that are, it's not the funeral home that works with Gift of Life. It's the hospital and Gift of Life work together to preserve the option of donation until they can have a conversation with you about whether that's, you know, whether your husband was a registered donor or whether you would like to learn more about that and make a decision. If you have questions or You know, you can just call 800-482-4881, and there's always somebody there 24/7. And we do prioritize family calls. We know that the call is from the family, and there's a way to say that. I mean, you know that.
I'm saying this from an outside perspective of funeral directors that may have issues with this specific situation, or family members that may be listening that have had an experience like I'm saying.
Right.
Well, I think just that knowledge right there of there is procedures in place, and these are how the procedures go. It's not the funeral home's fault that this body's on hold.
Right.
I guess what I'm saying is, again, this is where we got to do. I think we have to do a better job of educating, because there is procedures in place that have to go. It's just like anything else. It has to go step by step.
Yeah. I mean, your loved one can have a viewing, right? You can be a full organ and tissue donor and still have a viewing. It is possible. But we can't say, yes, you can view your loved one after donation and autopsy, before cremation with no preparation. That is not our place. We're experts in donation, and funeral homes are experts in, but it's a very careful,
it's a dangerous.
It is. Well, it's respect for each other, for our professions.
Stepping on feet. Yeah.
You know, with that, Stephanie, we'll conclude this conversation. And I think we at least communicate about some things that people are very scared about when it comes to donation. I just want to say to the listeners out there, if you have any questions for Stephanie or for Gift of Life of Michigan, you feel free to contact them, or you can write us an email at letstalkaboutdeathpod@gmail.com. Please, listen to us and send us out. And if maybe you have a family member that's been debating about, donation, send out this episode, get the conversation going, get it started. And Stephanie, from the bottom of my heart, and Docs, thank you so much for taking time. Thank you for doing what you do. You are very impressive. Your Gift of Life of Michigan has saved a lot of people's life, and at the end of the day, that's what it's for. So thank you so much yet again. Do you have any closing thoughts, remarks you would like to leave? Or
say likewise. Thank you for doing what you do. It's been I'm not a licensed funeral director. A lot of people across the country in my role are. I love working with funeral homes, and I love serving families. You know, what we collectively do is just honoring what a family wants. And like I said earlier, what you do makes what we do possible. And if we can just be collaborative and communicative, and get questions and answer them and open up lines of communication, I think it'll be best for everyone.
Well, and congratulations for, what'd you say, last year was the highest donation? So
yes,
far?
For that's organ amazing. And tissue donation. Yeah.
That says something about what you guys do. So,
and it's a trend across the country. I mean,
I think tell yourself short here.
I think that donation, resistant funeral homes are kind of a thing of the past, because families want to donate. To me, an informed no is just as rewarding as an informed yes. If we can't get the information communicated because somebody else is having a conversation and we're the experts, it's really disappointing. But if a family receives, for example, an angry family that because there's a hold at the hospital, if they're encouraged just to, hey, give Gift of Life a call. They'll explain everything, whether your loved one even has potential for donation. And if they do, listen to what they have to say and make a decision. It's empowering and helpful.
Well, again, thank you so much. We really do appreciate what all of you do out there, helping people make those hard decisions, especially at the hardest time in their lives, especially when you lose a loved one. So thank you again.
Yeah. And, Stephanie, at the end of the day, we'll just end it like we always do. And if you're not talking about death,
then you're not living. Thank you so much.